They're going to be jettisoning an awful lot of junk.
Not itchy. Not lumpy. Not mala.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 338, recorded on January 20, 2014. Welcome to the 338th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 171st episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Jonah Falcon.
And I am Jordan Lund.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry. So, we took a week off because Jordan was in a medical emergency. We're not going to get into it, just that he couldn't make the podcast. And
yeah, it was no fun.
Yeah. But the thing is that this is early year. Not much is happening, although this week there's been some tasty news items. But before we go into that, what have you been playing, Jordan?
I've been playing Lay on My Back. But besides that, I did get a little bit of Dead Rising 3. Okay. I'm not really into it yet. But I also, getting ready for The Witcher 3, I picked up The Witcher on Steam and The Witcher 2 for the Xbox 360. So I've been looking at those as well. And again, I've been otherwise occupied. I have not been able to dig too deeply into that. Besides my own medical issues, there's a death in my family. So there's been a lot of stuff going on that is not gaming related, unfortunately.
So, just so you know, there's a 13-gigabyte update coming to Dead Rising 3, so...
Oh.
Yeah, but it's in preparation for the DLC, that's why. There's DLC coming.
Do we know what's in it?
No, it basically is getting the game ready for the DLC that's going to be released for it.
Gotcha.
I haven't investigated the DLC for Dead Rising 3 yet, but it should be interesting.
I have like a day one code that I haven't even put in yet.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, those day one codes are fun. I mean, like I said, I hope to be sending you one of the day one year subscriptions, which comes with a Killer Instinct demo with an exclusive right. character. By the way, there's a character that's going to be released for DLC on Killer Instinct, which is basically no bones, just a character who has no bones. That's just all I know about it.
I downloaded the Killer Instinct. The demo lets you play as Jago, and it's every bit as terrible as I remember Killer Instinct to be.
Everybody loves it. Everybody's enjoying Killer Instinct, yeah. though.
No, I hated Killer Instinct when it was new, and I still hate Killer Instinct. So, yeah, it's the Image Comics of fighters. It's all flash and no substance, even worse than Mortal Kombat.
Okay. As for me, I've been inching along in Assassin's Creed 4. Slow progress. I haven't been playing much of anything lately. I mean, when I do get to sit back and relax, I play games like Puerto Rico on my iPad. You know, so. And by the way, I'm getting really sick of the first generation iPad. I can't afford a new one, but if a friend of mine says he'll give me his current one when he upgrades to the iPad Air, it's just the iPad first gen. I don't know how people you were around for the first generation.
I have a first gen iPad, and here's the problem with the first gen iPad is that it has half as much memory as all the other iPads after it. But with the operating system, Apple conveniently forgot that fact. So if you update to iOS 4, it's a dog. If you update to iOS 5, it's borderline unusable.
Well, I have 5.1.1, which is all it'll let me upgrade because I can't use the iOS 7, which is where, you know, something right. like Smart Glass can be used. You know, the Xbox One Smart Glass can be used with that. So I can't use it with this.
There's a way to downgrade it. I have a method of downgrading it. I haven't attempted it yet, but I'll send you a link and you might be able to drop it down to iOS 3, which is what it came with.
But you know what?
It's perfectly usable at 3.
That's not the real problem for me, though. The real problem for me is that Apple refuses to let you merge your accounts. I have two accounts and... The iPad is schizophrenic because it's under one account and my main account is another account. Don't ask me how that happened. It just happened that way. And you know,
the method that I have would wipe it completely. So you would be able to hook it up to whatever account you want.
No, it isn't the iOS. It's the fact that I want to merge my Apple accounts.
Oh, I see.
And Apple, for some reason, doesn't do that. Everybody else in the universe lets you merge accounts, but not Apple.
Yeah, yeah. Apple has their own way of doing things, and it's obviously superior to everybody else.
Yeah. The thing is that their DRM for music was superior until people started buying their music from Amazon, which was DRM-free. And then Apple said, oh, you know what? Maybe we should do DRM-free too. You know?
Right.
There's no way, you know, there's nothing that's going to, that's an incentive for them to merge accounts because.
Right.
Why let people merge their accounts when they can buy the same content again?
Exactly. Yeah.
You know? I mean, even, you know, Microsoft allows you to merge your accounts, except with Skype, which is weird. Let's see, who else? Sony allows you to merge your accounts. Good Old Games allows you to merge your accounts. Netflix allows you to merge your accounts. Everybody allows you to merge your accounts except for Apple. So, don't tell me why.
Well,
it's just the way it
is. Yeah. I'm not even going to go down the Apple hate road. We'd have to have a whole separate podcast just for that.
Did you see there was a biopic on Steve Jobs?
Yes.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. I think it's on Netflix, but I haven't.
My wife saw it. She enjoyed it, and I bought her the biography for Christmas a couple years ago.
Yeah. I'm planning on getting from Amazon the entire universe DVD set. It's on sale at $60, down from $100. And for anybody who hasn't seen The Universe, it is a must-watch. If you're even halfway interested in astronomy.
I don't think I've seen The Universe.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, I just watched The Outer Planets.
Is it on Netflix?
Over and over.
Maybe I'll look at Netflix.
It's no longer on Netflix. It was on Netflix. It no longer is. Although, I did... I rented the disc from Netflix and ripped them onto my computer, which is why I went by the... Which is why I want to buy the the thing is that it's also on YouTube, I think.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
But I'm telling you right now, The Universe is the best astronomy documentary series. It was like for 5 years. I don't know why they didn't start it up again.
So it's like Planet Earth, only with the universe.
No, it's you know, there's some things like it you know what. The first season is just pretty basic. It focuses on planets, you know, planets in the sun and all that stuff. And then it gets into some wild stuff like the 10 best ways to destroy the Earth.
Oh, okay.
One of the best.
I've actually seen that episode. I didn't know it was part of a larger series.
Yeah, the best. One of the best ways, of course, is to have it spaghettified between two black holes. Then they have the strange matter one. That to me is frightening.
Yeah.
Strange matter. For those who don't know, what strange matter does, it turns other things into strange matter. So basically what happens to the Earth, it becomes a giant ice cream cone that melts. So anyways, getting into video game news, some really interesting news out here. I'll start the first one. Nintendo evaluating new business, studying, in quotes, smart devices. And this comes to us from Games Industry Biz. Nintendo CEO Satoru Iwata has been reacting today to the company's poorer-than-expected financial results, in which the Wii U forecasts were slashed significantly. It appears that Nintendo is going to have a third consecutive annual operating loss, and the company is aware that it needs to act. According to Iwata in his press conference in Osaka, "We are thinking about a new business structure. Given the expansion of smart devices, we're naturally studying how smart devices can be used to grow the game player business. It's not as simple as enabling Mario to move on to the smartphone. Putting Nintendo games on smartphones is something that many of analysts have been pushing for in recent months." According to Chief Fund Manager at Isayoshi Asset Management Company, "The video game market has moved into smartphones and tablets. Nintendo needs to expand from their current hardware business model. It's a structural problem. Nintendo, however, has always said that its games will only be playable on its own hardware. While it's certainly possible to program some Nintendo games to work on a smartphone's touchscreen, Nintendo's philosophy is that the quality of its first-party titles would be compromised if not on Nintendo hardware. Regardless, something must be done to stop the bleeding. We cannot continue a business without winning," Iwata said. "We must take a skeptical approach on whether we can simply make game players offer them the same way as in the past for 20,000 or 30,000 yen and sell titles for a couple of thousand yen each." Okay. There's an entire cornucopia here to discuss. Jordan, why don't you take first crack at this?
Okay, so let's be first and foremost. When they said that they slashed it significantly, right? They slashed their forecast from making a profit of 120 million yen, I believe it was, to a loss of 25 million yen. That's a 135 million yen swing from positive to negative. They cut their forecast by 70%. In other words, we're sorry, our predictions were off by 70%, which is just huge. The one piece that this article doesn't talk about is that there's actually talk that Iwata-san needs to retire. They have fumbled so badly that they need a change in leadership at Nintendo. I think the
boom in Wii sales from 2007 to 2009, I think Nintendo looked at those sales too blindly as a trend instead of a fluke, you know?
Yeah.
Not as a fluke, but as more of a cultural thing.
It was a bubble. And it was selling to people who don't buy games.
The thing is that
now that they're out of the market,
Nintendo, though, the problem is that Nintendo viewed this as a new market that they could exploit.
Right.
You know, and that was a trap. To me, that was a trap. You know,
the people who were purchasing the console at that point in time were people like my mom, people like my sister, who bought it because it was a fad. And now that the fad's over, they've moved on to other things.
Yeah. But the thing is that, you know, I mean, it's not so bad to follow the fad, but Nintendo decided it would focus on that market and alienate its core market, which in hindsight, well, not maybe not even hindsight. I mean, I was saying this at the time, you know.
You and I were both saying this at the time. The analogy I used is you're marketing a version of poker to people who do not like poker.
Well, it isn't that. It's just that. I'm not talking about marketing to someone that you know. That's fine if you want to market to them, but you're alienating your core base. You know, the people who will buy your stuff sight unseen. You know, I mean, even the most
even
the most hardcore of people, Paul, he bought into every single Nintendo hardware, right?
Yeah.
And even now, you know, he stopped talking about the Nintendo brand and has started talking about game brand, which is what Nintendo does not want people to do.
Right.
You know? I mean, they want first-party hardware sales. They don't want third-party hardware sales. So when Paul stops talking about how great the Wii U is and starts talking about how great Kingdom Hearts is, there's a problem there.
Right. No, that's absolutely true. I think there's two ways Nintendo has out of this. The first way, as they mentioned in the article, is to somehow leverage their games into a mobile space. An official emulator would be great. I'd love to see it. Figuring out how to play on a touchscreen without buttons would be challenging, but I'm sure it could be done. Other iOS games have figured out how to do virtual buttons, so that shouldn't be a problem.
When is Nintendo going to cut bait on the Wii U?
I don't know. I don't know that they can cut bait on the Wii U. I think they're too deep into the Wii U.
No, I mean you can have a mistake. I mean, look how fast they cut bait on, say, the Virtual Boy. You know, they made their sales and they.
Well,
they
I'd have to
admit
look, I'd look,
that
I'd
they've,
have to
they've
look
sold
up.
All the Wii U's that they're probably going to sell for the foreseeable future.
They can actually turn that around in one way, which is the second point I was going to make, and that would be to use the Wii U, use the connection to the big screen TV and the tablet combined to play DS games in your living room. And if there was a way to suddenly play Pokemon XY on the big screen TV and the tablet the same way you would play on a 2DS, they would have another license to print money. But whether they're capable of doing that or understand that that's necessary, I don't know.
But here's the thing, is that one thing that Nintendo's been behind on, and it's bitten them on the butt, you know, not being... But they are still a decade behind in the online space.
Oh, absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
That's something that's bitten... Because Nintendo has an eShop. No one uses it.
Yeah. They made good strides with the Virtual Console. And
they made good strides in the virtual console because of content, you know, but you have to have more than just
because
content.
Of content.
You know, one thing they don't have, you know, yeah, you had the virtual store, but you didn't have an account. So if you wanted to delete a game off your hard drive, that meant you're gonna have to buy that game over again if you wanted it back on your hard drive. You know, that when then they say, well, you can store it on your SD card. So what? No, I want to be able to. Steam does it. I go to a new computer. You know, I have a new laptop. I boot up Steam. My games are right there. The ones that I can play on my laptop, I can just download instantly. And even have my cloud saves if I want to. You know, Nintendo is back. I mean, same thing with the Xbox 360, Xbox One. I don't know the story about the PS3 or the PS4, but I know that if I get a new Xbox, an Xbox 360 for whatever reason, I have a new hard drive, and I didn't transfer my I can still download my content from Xbox Live Xbox Live Marketplace because it knew I purchased that content. You know,
yeah, it's the same on the PS3 and PS4 and Vita. You know, I picked up Escape Plan for the Vita, and when it became available for the PS4, it's like, hey, you can download this.
That's
you already paid for it.
I'm talking about
it is cross platform.
I'm talking but about it's, I'm not it, purchasing content. You know, when you get a new system. For whatever reason, you don't have your hard drive and, you know, your stuff, they remember what you bought and they say, listen, if you want to download it again.
But it's the same thing too, that you can use the PS3 and the PS4 to store Vita content that you've purchased. And just like you can download it to your hard drive on your computer and transfer it over USB, you can do the same thing with the PS3 and PS4. That's all tied to the account.
But that's my point though. Nintendo is still a decade behind.
Yeah.
Or decades.
Well, Nintendo is perpetually behind in a lot of different ways.
Well,
We've discussed that on the podcast before.
You know, I don't care if your hardware is behind, you know, because to me a game, you know, the game is fun because it's a fun game. You know, it's not because, you know, I mean, some of my favorite games have average graphics or at least retro graphics. I mean, a lot of fun games have been released, you know, with retro graphics. Look at Mega Man 10, for instance, you know. No one's going to complain about the graphics because it's intentionally like that. That isn't what I'm going to be annoyed at. The thing is that, you know what I want? You know what I really want? When a friend pops up on the network, I wanted this ding, say, hey, guess what? Your friend is on now. And neither the Xbox One or PS4 does that, which I'm still baffled by. I don't understand that. Microsoft, Sony, that was the big thing about Xbox Live on the 360. You got this little notification. Hey, guess what? Grundle is on. Oh, Grundle's on. Let's play a game. You know?
Yeah. Well, the PS3 couldn't do it because they didn't have the correct memory space.
But I'm talking about Xbox Live. You know,
that, as I understand it, that is possible on the PS4.
Well, no, but you know, it's so simple. I mean, I like notifications on the Xbox One in which you can go to notifications and you see everything that your friends have been doing, including the videos that they uploaded and stuff like that. And by the way, you'll notice perhaps, maybe it's happened to you, that your Xbox One is uploading film clips for you when things happen.
No, I have not connected my Xbox One to any kind of social media whatsoever.
No, well, no, it does it automatically when you play a game.
It does it automatically if you play a game and you have gold, which enables the cloud save, but I don't have gold.
I don't know. It saves it on your hard drive, I think.
No, I haven't seen anything like that.
Oh, okay. I know Peggle does it every other second when you get a good score. Well, maybe it's because I'm such a badass Peggle 2 player and I keep on getting doing great things that it keeps on saving these clips. You know, it does, by the way, they do wipe away the clips automatically after like a week or something, you know, but I thought you had gold. You had your free gold.
No. I have free gold, but I haven't activated it yet.
Oh, you haven't?
I'm waiting for a reason to activate it, and so far I haven't found one.
Oh, I see. So you're waiting for that one multiplayer game that you just got to play, and it begins with a T and ends with an L.
No, I'm actually not going to be buying Titanfall.
Really?
Because Titanfall is multiplayer only. I'm not a fan of multiplayer games, and I don't want to shell out $60 for a game that's going to have a server cut off at some point in the future, I'm stuck with a $60 piece of plastic.
That's the point, though. It's a first-party game. It's not a first-party game, but it's not going to be playing on Activision's server, so they have no reason to cut it off. As long as you're paying
It's not Activision, it's EA.
Yeah, whatever. EA's not going to be playing it on their own servers. I don't think.
Well, I don't trust anything.
Actually,
with EA
thinking
involved.
About EA, you know, there's been this big kerfuffle about the AI in Titanfall and the cloud, and I'm confused about it. And you know, I don't really care because humans have better AI anyway, and that's a multiplayer game.
Well, from the reason why the AI thing is an issue is that you have the AI, the way Titanfall is set up is that it's 6 versus 6 multiplayer, but it's not entirely 6 versus 6. If you
right, so you have bots running around you,
are out of your Titan, you can set it up to do things autonomously.
Wow.
So if everybody is out of their Titans and all of their Titans are doing something autonomously, that becomes 12v12.
Actually, you know, that's kind of cool. And the thing is, you know, there's this big, well, there's only 6 versus 6. I don't care. I mean, some of the best multiplayer that I've had was in small groups like 5 versus 5, 6 versus 6. You know, like Duke Nukem 3D, the original Duke Nukem 3D. You know, people equate with huge battles as being better.
I just don't like multiplayer. You know, co-op is wonderful. I love co-op. I hate competitive multiplayer. So there's no point to me buying Titanfall.
Are you going to be buying Thief?
I will be buying Thief, I think. Yes.
Yeah. I can't believe that's out in like a month. It's
less than a month, isn't it? It's like it's February something, isn't it?
And you know, it's also coming out in February.
Hmm.
Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare. And that, and by the way, there is, and that, you know,
that's going to be multiplayer only, isn't
no,
it?
No, but
as well, free to play.
It has co-op. It has co-op with friends versus bots. So you have that the horde mode, and I saw they have an 11-minute demo of the horde mode. You know that it has, and it is really fun. So it's not multiplayer only.
I'm showing Thief on February 25th. I have my little buyer's list up. Thief on February 25th, Infamous Second Son on March 21st, yeah. And the rest of my list we don't have firm dates for except Destiny, which is September 9th. It's
in September, so
yeah, September 9th. Witcher 3 Wild Hunt September 30th.
Yeah, but I'm really looking forward to Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare, and I think it's not just multiplayer only. It has a single player mode. I think you know it's you versus with bots on your side and versus bots, and also a co-op mode. You know, so you have that Left 4 Dead sort of thing. And it's funny because every few levels, Dr. Zomboss will... And I think they have the reverse, too, because there are playable zombie classes as well. So I'm pretty sure you have the reverse horde mode in which you're the zombies attacking the garden. You know? I don't know that for sure. It's just my assumption, so don't take it as news. But Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare looks really good. Really good. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next news item. Take it away, Jordan.
Microsoft paying YouTubers for Xbox One mentions, and this comes to us from Ars Technica. The line between traditional paid advertising and organic editorial content on the internet can sometimes be hazy. A recent stealth promotional campaign between Microsoft and Machinima highlights just how hazy that line has become and how behind-the-scenes payments can drive ostensibly independent opinion mongering by users on services like YouTube. This weekend, word started leaking of a new promotion offering Machinima video partners an additional $3 CPM, $3 per 1,000 video views, for posting videos featuring Xbox One content. The promotion was advertised by Machinima's UK community manager in a since-deleted tweet, and it also appears on Machinima's activity feed on PopTent, a clearinghouse for these kinds of video marketing campaigns. The PopTent page also mentions an earlier campaign surrounding the Xbox One's launch in November, which offered an additional $1 CPM for videos promoting the Xbox One and its release games. To qualify for the campaign and the extra payments, Machinima partners had to post a video including at least 30 seconds of Xbox One game footage that mentioned the Xbox One by name and included the tag XB1M13. A YouTube search for the relatively unique term turns up about 6,590 results, but a quick scan of those results shows only a few hundred that actually seem to be tagged for the Machinima promotion. According to a leaked copy of the full legal agreement behind the promotion, video creators, quote, may not say anything negative or disparaging about Machinima, Xbox One, or any of its games, and must keep the details of the promotional agreement confidential in order to qualify for payment. The arrangement, as described, might go against the FTC's guidelines for the use of endorsements in advertising, which demand full disclosure when there is a, quote, connection between the endorser and the seller of the advertised product that might materialize materially affect the weight or credibility of the endorsement. This kind of guerrilla online video advertising doesn't seem to be a major part of Microsoft's Xbox One marketing plan. According to the Machinima email, Microsoft agreed to pay only for the first 1.25 million views in the promotion, putting the budget paid to video creators at a mere $3,750. It's unclear if Machinima itself received any additional funds by facilitating the promotion. Pop Tent lists the campaign, which started on January 14th, as, quote, expired on January 16th, suggesting that Microsoft has already reached that desired video view goal. That money may be pulling in more than its weight, though, as those videos continue to attract additional views that Microsoft doesn't have to pay for directly.
Yeah, I mean, if I have no problem with this, so long as it's transparent, as the thing says, as the FTC says, that, you know, you have to show that this content, this endorsement was paid for, right? But it's also incredibly cheap. I mean,
right.
Less than $4,000 for one point, and it's not that much, but it is interesting to see this kind of promotion going on behind the scenes.
And it's quite common for large companies to not really respect what social media can do for them. We see that in the Jack in the Box commercials, right, where the social media person at Jack in the Box is a teenaged idiot. As somebody who works for a social media marketing company, that's kind of a painful portrayal. But
I think I did see that tag XB1M13 on a video a while ago, and I had no idea what that meant. And I guess I know what it means now.
Well, and you wouldn't have known what it was because they legally, contractually, could not tell you what it was.
Well, come on, Xbox One, Microsoft 2013. I mean, that's what it basically says. But you know,
exactly. Yeah. But the meaning of it, they could not tell you what that meant, right?
Go ahead.
If you saw the viral video last week of the demon baby that was a promotion for some
Devils
new
do.
Horror flick.
Devils Do. Yeah.
At the very end, at least they tell you what this whole thing was for. But, and if they wanted to do YouTube videos that way of say, hey, this YouTube video brought to you by blah, 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 I'd be cool with that too.
Yeah. I mean, but it's better than killing a goat for a promotion.
Really. It's better than killing a goat or putting your game on tombstones.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, I'm a claim would have demanded something weirder than just mentioning it. Like they would demand that the podcaster name their entire podcast after a claim or after the game.
We want you to tattoo your baby.
Yeah. Yeah. Put a tattoo on your baby with a claim on it. Yes.
Yeah.
And do it on YouTube. Anyway, moving on to the next item. Trademark 1313 trademark. Oh, what am I saying?
Star Wars. Yeah.
Star Wars 1313 trademark abandoned. This comes to us from Games Industry Biz. If there was any doubt that the Star Wars 1313 was never seen the light of day, the trademark filed with the United States Patent and Trademark Office has now lapsed. Despite a notice of the impending lapse in November, documents from the organization show that in December, it was quote-unquote abandoned because no statement of use or extension request timely filed after notice of allowance was issued. This LucasArts game was first revealed in June 2012, just ahead of E3, and I was there at E3 when they were doing all the advertising for it, by the way.
Oh, the videos were amazing.
Yeah. Star Wars 1313 delves into a part of the Star Wars mythos that we've always known existed but never had a chance to visit, President Paul Meegan said at the time. Of course, the project was always at risk after Disney acquired Lucasfilm in October 2012, along with the Star Wars franchise, and then shut down LucasArts development last April. At the time, a LucasArts representative told the press, quote, there's always a possibility that Star Wars 1313 can still come out via licensing, but this latest news suggests that will not be the case. You know,
if it does come out.
Yeah, when Paul Meegan said that Star Wars 1313 dives into a part of the Star Wars mythos, now, you know, it dives into a different part of the Star Wars mythos. Those, what could have been mythos, you know? Those games that were in development but never came out. And they actually had a long list of logos. Remember that news item? It was we talked about the games that they were planning but never got through to.
Right.
Yeah, there's a whole and it goes so much deeper than that. I mean, since we started talking about this, there have been major announcements out of Disney as far as licensing goes. And, you know, they pulled the Marvel license from Activision. All of the Activision Marvel games are no longer for sale on Xbox Live and PSN. Yeah. They're gone. They have.
Well, see, this is why I like physical media so much. They're, you know.
Right. Well, and they've pulled the comic license from Dark Horse. Once their current contract with Dark Horse expires, Dark Horse won't be doing Star Wars comics anymore. They're moving out to Marvel since Disney owns Marvel. Makes sense.
Well, Marvel and did Star Wars for a while, too. I mean,
Marvel did do Star Wars originally back in the 70s. Yeah. Absolutely correct. So it's kind of coming home for Marvel. But, you know, and then the other part of it is that they have hired a guy to go through and basically gut the expanded universe stuff on Star Wars. So they're going to be doing a top down review of what is and what is not canon. And they're going to be jettisoning an awful lot of junk.
No, save Akmina. She's supposed to be canon.
They're going to be jettisoning an awful lot of junk.
Not Itchy. Not Lumpy, not Mala.
So we'll see what they end up ditching. But, you know, there's a whole lot of shakeups going on with the now Disney-owned properties of Star Wars and Marvel. So it'll be interesting to see. And I can see definitely
Electronic Arts is still involved. It has the video game license that they got from Disney.
Freshly acquired, yes.
Yeah, so they're not going to have to worry about people like Revan and stuff like that. You know, Star Wars The Republic, that's going to remain. What interests me, though, is that, you know, people don't know this, but the Star Wars the Old Republic comic books, or Knights of the Old Republic comic books that the game was based on, were very different than the video game. I mean, they made them, you know, they had them in sort of like a Stone Age version, right? While the video game was sort of seemed like 20 years before the series, even though it was 1,000 years. So the video game resembled the current series a lot more than the comics, and I'm wondering if the comics are going to remain canon then, if that's the case, you know?
You know, it's not been said what's going to happen to all the DC books that were Dark Horse books that were printed. You know, I don't even know who's going to have the rights on the reprints. If Dark Horse will continue to be able to reprint them, or if what is out there now is what's out there now, and then once it's gone, it's gone. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how this all plays out over the next couple of years.
I don't know. As Dark Horse retains the Aliens and Predator franchises, I'm fine.
Well, they picked up Game of Thrones as well, so, you know.
Oh, there we go. Aliens versus Predators versus Game of Thrones.
But the
wouldn't be beyond them, by the way.
It wouldn't be beyond them,
I mean, if you have X-Men, Star Trek crossovers, although that was Marvel, wasn't it?
That was Marvel and, DC, I think, that crossed over.
No, it was just Marvel. Because remember, Marvel – see, DC had the Star Trek license for a while, then Marvel took it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But still, if you can have that crossover,
whatever's going to happen is going to be over and done with by the time episode 7 turns up, and that's the whole point, is they're trying to get everything in line before episode 7 comes out. And that's, you know, it sounds like a long way away. It's 2015 is next year now, so there you go.
But well, it's late 2015. But
it's late 2015.
Here's the thing.
Yeah.
Getting back to the original subject, didn't Star Wars 1313 strike you as sort of uncharted in the Star Wars universe?
I think it was. I can't remember exactly what the plot line was.
It was just the action in it. If you remember the videos and all that, the third person action was very reminiscent of Uncharted.
It was. And wasn't this was the one about the bounty hunters, right?
Right. This is the bounty hunter thing. And the thing is, it was originally supposed to be about Boba Fett. Then they decided they were just going to make it about a generic. And then it was going to be about Boba Fett, but it was canceled before they had a chance to make the reveal.
Right.
You know, it was going to be Boba Fett, you know?
Yeah.
So, we'll see. I mean, and the thing is that before people start getting all misty-eyed, the development was very troubled. I mean, from what I understand, the game was not even close to being any, like, 20% finished, you know? It's just a lot of hype and nothing really came of it, and the development was just a shambles. So it may have been just a mercy killing.
I expect that that's probably the case. And if there's anything if I could speak, if there's anything salvageable, it'll resurface under a new name.
You know what? There's always that thing of fantasy in which you can just pretend what it was going to be like and make it the coolest game ever. You know, a game that's never released is always the best game ever.
Yes, like Thrill Kill.
Well, Thrill Kill was released. You just wish it wasn't released. Oh, wait.
Thrill Kill was released as a bootleg, but it was never commercially released.
Oh, no. I was thinking about Manhunt. Never mind. Anyways. Moving on to the next item.
Sony. Oh, wait a second. I guess this is you, isn't it?
This is you.
Oh, is it me? Okay.
Wait a minute. This is you. Because you did Microsoft.
I did Microsoft. Yeah. You did Star Wars. Yep. Okay, great. Gosh, Sony creating new PS3 hardware for PS Now.
Do it again. Pardon? Do it again. Okay. Talked over you.
Sony creating new PS3 hardware for PS Now. This comes to us from Games Industry Biz. Following Sony's CES reveal that it's about to enter a closed beta of its Gaikai-based cloud gaming service, PlayStation Now, sources who have been briefed on the project have informed Digital Foundry that Sony is re-engineering its PS3 hardware to make the streaming service possible. Initially, Sony tested the idea of putting standard retail PS3 units into data centers, but a number of constraints, space, power efficiency, etc., made this look ineffective. Instead, Sony was reportedly able to shrink the equivalent of 8 PS3s onto a single motherboard, and it's all housed in a slimline server cabinet. Importantly, this new PS3 server design enables Sony to shave a few milliseconds from end-to-end latency, which might not sound like a lot, but as we all know, latency is one of the biggest technology hurdles still holding back cloud gaming in the real world. Quote, in creating new PS3 servers for the PlayStation Now, the team worked closely with their new Gaikai colleagues in engineering, creating a new PS3 adapted to the cloud streaming challenge, as Digital Foundry Rich Ledbetter. The secret sauce of new design remains just that. In its briefings to publishers participating in the currently closed beta testing, Sony has only revealed rough details of the servers. It'd be neat to see a photograph of this. I'm expecting a 1U server, maybe a 2U server. You don't need any physical media because it's all going to be digitally stored. That could be very cool.
So before we move on, describe PS Now, because we really didn't discuss it. In the past few weeks?
Well, we don't have a lot of details on it. It's going to be, from what I understand, a Netflix-style service on top of PlayStation Plus. So you'll have your PlayStation Plus account. You'll have the option of subscribing to PlayStation Now. If you subscribe to PlayStation Now, you'll have whatever content they're delivering streaming straight to your PlayStation 4, PlayStation 3, and PlayStation Vita. It was demoed at CES. It was demoed showing The Last of Us running on a PlayStation Vita, which was very impressive. But again, we don't know the distances and what kind of network they were going.
Yeah, you never know anything until it's done in the wild.
Yeah. At a show like CES, if they were involving any kind of outside connection, I can guarantee you that that probably was not running live. It had to have been a local connection because you know as well as I do, trying to get any kind of outside communication at a show like CES or E3 or PAX is freaking impossible. Go back to your hotel room and you've got a shot from the show floor. Forget it.
Why I had to upgrade my laptop because it wasn't using the new Wi-Fi. You know, that string of numbers, it was using the old one and I could not log in at E3. So I said, screw it. I have to get a new laptop with better Wi-Fi.
Well, even from my mobile hotspot, I couldn't get a connection because the cell towers were saturated, right? Mm. So, they had to have been doing something locally to stream that. And like what I found with the remote play on my PlayStation 4 and Vita, it works great if you're in the same room. God help you if you get out of the same room, but it works fine as long as, you're 10 to 15 feet away. And if that's what they were doing at CES, that explains why it worked so well.
Yeah, I mean, well, the point is, though, why play something on your Vita when you're there with your console? I guess you could say, someone wants to watch TV.
Vita,
well, I mean, I guess if someone wants to watch TV and you want to play, your PS4 game, but still.
Right.
you know, you the attraction of having that was supposed to be, oh, you can take your PS Vita on, you know, a couple of miles away and start gaming Infamous Second Son, you know, on while you're out somewhere a ways away from your PS4, but that will never happen, at least the way it is.
I have heard of people getting into work in isolated situations with a 4G LTE connection and nothing else.
Yeah. So, okay, so we're going to move on to listener feedback. From Alphashard. Hi, guys. Great show again. I like the idea of tuning in a CD. From Alphashard. Hi, guys. Great show again. I like the idea of turning in a CD or just having the old DRM code to get a digital version of the game. This is what Blizzard does with their library. I was able to get digital versions of Warcraft 3 and Starcraft because of my old DRM codes that I've been holding on to. I think more companies should do that since we did buy the game. Why should we have to pay again for a digital version? That happens a lot when you buy a game now, a PC game, and you don't even have to give it a Steam code. You just put it in, and Steam will recognize you have that game. And if you have the equivalent, it'll say, "Oh, by the way, you have that game. Well, you can play it on Steam too." You know, at Steambox. I thought there was only going to be one, but apparently there's going to be 13 of them, priced from cheap to very expensive. This may be a good and easy way for people to find the Steambox that will be well suited to their needs.
The high end ones, the $2,000 and $3,000 ones, are not Steam boxes; they're PCs.
Yeah, and the problem I have is, like I said, I'm sorry, I'm not going to use my PC to watch TV. I'm just going to use my TV to watch TV. You know, and if I want to play a game on my TV from my PC, if I really want to, I have a TV in out on my computer anyway. I don't need another PC that's gimped and not as good. Because I'm not going to pay $2,000 to $3,000 for a high-end PC when I already have one, you know. At Sony streaming old games, I agree that I want this, and they should make their entire library available. The fact that Jordan still has a functioning backwards-compatible PS3 didn't go unnoticed. I'd love to get one myself, but the issue is they stopped making these consoles, so it isn't easy to get an old console to play an old game. Much easier just to get an emulator, at least for PS1 and PS2. Well, there's something called eBay. You know,
there is eBay, and if you're willing to pay a premium price, there are used sales on Amazon as well. I bought mine at a store, really luckily, so I had no problems.
At the question of the week, I am most looking forward to the Pillars of Eternity. It promised to be a great RPG game, and for those, the Pillars of Eternity is what used to be Project Eternity. You know, the Obsidian RPG, and I know Jordan is interested in this. Not that he wants to play the game; he just wants to see if it'll be released bug free.
So, yes,
this is Obsidian on their own schedule.
I have doubts when it comes to Obsidian. I'm sorry.
Say it again, Jordan.
I said I have doubts when it comes to Obsidian. I'm sorry.
What's funny is that Square actually delayed releasing a game because they wanted Obsidian. You know, they told Obsidian, listen, okay, it's not ready, make it right. And when they released Dungeon Siege 3, it was still buggy.
Yeah.
So,
and I understand software development is tricky. I actually was previewing beta code at my employer on Friday, found a whole bunch of bugs.
You know, the problem with Obsidian,
for a product that was due to be released coming Friday.
You know, the problem with Obsidian is that they're the video game company equivalent of Peter Molyneux. They make big promises, but unlike Peter Molyneux, who scales them back, Obsidian just trudges forward with their original concept and tries to make it work.
Yes, and sometimes it works, and sometimes you have characters whose heads spin on their neck like a windmill.
Yeah, but that reminds me, they're actually releasing the Fable Trilogy on digital for the Xbox 360, which is disappointing to me because I think, you know what? I would like it if you released the trilogy on Xbox One. Because here's the thing about Fable. You know, there's one thing I've noticed about Fable is that, for me, it's a very relaxing RPG. You know?
Well, wait a second. I saw that release, the Fable trilogy. I thought that was for Xbox One.
You're saying it's only Xbox 360. I don't know. Let me look it up.
What's the whole point of that? Because haven't they already given away Fable 2 and Fable 3 for free?
It is. The Fable trilogy will be released in February. And bundling the Xbox. Oh, okay. I guess it is for the Xbox One. And
that makes more sense.
No, wait. Hold on. I contacted Microsoft for more details. It may be just the 360 bundle here. Hold on one second. Yeah, it is for the 360. But it's the entire trilogy in one package and includes Fable Anniversary. Which sucks. I want it for the Xbox One, damn it. No, I mean, it's a bundle. It's a bundle that's going to be digital, completely digital, and it includes the anniversary edition of Fable. The thing is that you know what I like about Fable? It's very relaxing, you know? It's deep enough. It's just deep enough so that you don't feel like you're playing some mindless thing. But it's also very, very light, you know?
Yeah.
It has the reactions, you know, it has the dynamics that Peter Molyneux wanted, but not as much as he really wanted. But you ever play Fable and just feel completely, you know, relaxed and at home?
I think the first two games, yes. The third one, not so much. The third one felt kind of very disjointed and unfinished.
Really? I didn't think.
Yeah.
I mean, just put on your chicken suit and go fight, you know? And come on, Fable 3 has John Cleese.
Fable 3 does have John Cleese, but I'm not a fan of Fable 3.
Well,
you get into the whole ruling the kingdom thing, and you're supposed to have a year, and all of a sudden a third of your year is gone because the story just decides.
No, you see,
to jump
that,
forward that many
see,
days.
Here's the thing is that you made the mistake. What happens is that the year only advances when you start making decisions on the throne.
Right.
All you have to do is avoid the throne room.
Well, the thing of it is that as you're playing the game, the little automated path that's showing you where to go leads you straight to the throne
room. Well, no, but you make custom waypoints.
Yeah.
You're supposed to make custom waypoints. It's not gonna lead you back if you do that.
There's nothing in the game that tells you that, right?
Well,
so
no,
you reach a point about halfway through the game where it guides you to the throne room over and over and over again, and then all of a sudden the game is over.
You shouldn't. No,
that's the way it works, Jonah.
That's not the way it works. You've been playing it wrong. Anyway, here's the thing: is that one of the other things that I liked about Fable 3, though, is the extreme mood whiplash. If you remember playing the game like 2/3 of the way through, it's the typical lighthearted, comedic RPG game, right? And all of a sudden, the creeper is introduced, and suddenly it becomes very dour and serious.
And you have 1 year to save the kingdom, otherwise everyone dies.
Well, or go into the real estate business.
Yeah.
The one thing to get around that, to be nice to everybody and save and have enough gold, is to own every single building in your kingdom, and just and collect the rent. To save the kingdom, you must be a ruthless landlord.
So yeah, the way the game presented itself to me is, congratulations, you now get to make kingly decisions. And so I was making kingly decisions, and all of a sudden the game ended. And it was really, really, really weak. I paid $5 for the game, and I still feel ripped off.
I wanna buy the PC version and play it in 3D. Because, you know, I actually put the 3D glasses on for the 3D version of Fable 3. You know, they had it on demo. And it was the best 3D I've ever seen in any game.
Huh.
You know, it was like, because they knew it. They knew it wasn't trying to do a coming at you. Instead,
right.
It was like you were watching action figures on a tabletop do stuff.
Like a Viewmaster kind of thing.
It was 3D. And, yeah. You know, you had depth and all that and looked 3D. But it wasn't trying to do the depth, you know, coming at you sort of thing. Rather than it was just doing the you're watching action figures come to life.
Yeah, that's the way 3D televisions work.
Yeah, but in this case, it's deliberate.
Right.
So, anyways, we don't have a question of the week.
What has happened to 3D, by the way? Have you noticed that 3D just kind of seems to have
faded
away?
Well, you still have the occasional 3D movie. I mean, there isn't a CGI animated feature that comes out that doesn't have 3D, for one. You know, it doesn't have a 3D version of it.
That's true. We saw Frozen, and Frozen was 3D.
Yeah. Or Peter Jackson film. So, yeah. But you know, the thing is that I told you it's a 30 year. You know, every 30 years, 3D becomes really, really hot. 50s,
yeah.
80s, the 10th.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So, but in this case, it's lingering because the technology is catching up.
Yeah.
You know, so the 3D technology is catching up. It's a lot less expensive to try and do it. You have 3D glasses that, you know, there aren't either the, I forgot what they're called. You know, those anaglyphic, you know, they don't have the anaglyphic glasses And for those of you who are wondering what I'm talking about, it's the red and blue lenses that you put on.
Right.
And people are starting to recognize that a lot of people wear glasses now. Although some of them do, some of them don't. And I wear glasses, and it's really weird because I have to wear glasses on top of glasses sometimes. I love the people who have...
Yo, dog, we heard you like glasses.
Yeah, the thing is that I love the ones that have the goggles, which go around so that your glasses fit right inside it. You know?
Right, right.
But I don't watch 3D movies because, one, it's darker. Two, I don't need it. It's not something I care about. And I'm not one of those people who can't see 3D because there are people, no matter how hard they try, they cannot see the 3D when they watch a 3D movie.
Right. The polarized lenses just don't work on their eyes. Yep.
And there are some people who they just mashes their brain into a soft pulp. Anyways, I have not seen Avatar, and I refuse to see Avatar because I already saw Dance of the Wolves once.
Avatar was okay. The thing that impressed me most about Avatar was that the transition from humans to CGI was seamless. Yeah. You could not tell the difference between the humans and the CGI.
The one movie that I saw in which the CGI was flawless. There are two movies I've seen in the past few years that the CGI is flawless. One is Prometheus. Prometheus has excellent CGI. I mean, the opening scene. Remember the opening scenes?
Yes.
That, you know, with the ship coming through the clouds and all that, that was perfect, right?
Yeah.
And the other one is World War Z, which had flawless CGI as well.
I still haven't seen World War Z.
Wow. You know what? The ending is cheap. You know, you can tell where they decided to wrap it up quickly. But the movie itself is really fun. It's a really fun movie.
From what I've been told, as far as a zombie movie goes, it's not a bad zombie movie. The problem is it has nothing in comparison to World War Z.
But here's the thing is, you know, the way they depict the zombies is they depict them as a natural force. I mean, there's one part in which the zombies are literally flowing like a river through.
Right, right.
Sort of like, you know.
And I saw that in the trailers, yeah.
The opening scene in Philadelphia is jaw-dropping. It is that good. It is really that good. The scene in the scene in South Korea is hilarious. I'll just say that. And the scene in Jerusalem is really horrifying and funny at the same time. And I'm not going to give it away for you. I mean, even though you might have seen the thing, but the way the zombies overcome the defenses is just chilling in a good way.
I might.
But
take a look at it on Netflix or
really
something.
Have to
maybe Redbox it,
especially the opening scenes. It's a pity you didn't see it in the movie theater, the opening scenes, because the opening scenes, it is just great. And I didn't see it in 3D either. You know, and the airplane scene as well is really good too.
I have a 56-inch television set, so I'm not missing out on too much.
Okay. Well, the thing is, like I said, this is turning into the movie podcast for a moment. The other movie that I saw, I finally saw, a few days ago, which I really liked, was At World's End.
Oh, are you talking about the Simon Pegg movie?
Yeah. And the thing is that I liked it even more than Shaun of the Dead because it was – one thing, it was darker. And I don't mean darker. Actually, the science fiction elements are far lighter than Shaun of the Dead. But the subject matter was heavier, especially for people who are our age.
Yes.
Because you've seen it, right? At World.
Oh yeah, we saw it in the theater.
Okay,
yeah,
the thing is, you know what it's really about? Now I can't identify from this point because I live in a big city, but you know how people from the big city, when they come home to their hometown 20 years later, they're always, you know, they think they'll be treated like, you know, returning heroes,
yes,
and almost no one, almost no
son.
One remembers them, right?
Right, right.
That's what this film is about, especially the main character. And the thing is that when the secret is revealed, it's almost a relief. Oh, thank God. It wasn't the fact that I'm not that important, you know?
Right.
Also, it resonates with people who are going to their 20th or 25th reunion, having done absolutely nothing with their lives.
Yes.
You know, that feeling of having done that, you know?
Yes, yes.
And by the way,
the thing that I thought was absolutely brilliant about it was, and I'm not going to give away anything, but the complete ballsy ending that they gave the film.
Well, you know, that's the other thing is that
they didn't wuss out on the ending.
Well, here's the thing. I also have this this theory that the film is one character's dying dream, you know, and he's fantasizing about what life could have been like when he, you know, what's it called? And that he wants to be the hero, so he ends up the hero, you know?
Right, right.
Well, I will say this also, and tell me if you agree with this. I think this is also Nick Frost's best performance as well. The transformation of him from this cold businessman, who also, by the way, it, you know, has a fallen hero in King, right? Because he thought it was the best thing ever, and you know he has delusions. But the transformation of him from this cold businessman to that one moment in which things start hitting the fan, and the moment he downs those five shots, the transformation, then he turns into Nick Frost. You know?
Yeah, that was brilliant.
Yeah. The thing is, by the way, have you noticed they also switched roles from Shaun of the Dead, in which
yes.
Peg is now the wild, irresponsible character, and Frost
correct.
Now the – well, yes. Isn't quite uptight, but also the revelation of why he was in that group in the beginning. And when you first see it, you think it's either Alcoholics Anonymous or drug, you know, recovery group. It's neither. And when you watch the movie again, you're like, oh, crap. And you realize that his behavior becomes really sad, you know, when you realize what's going on with that scene.
Right, right. No, I agree. I thought it was very well done. I need to watch it again. I hope it's coming out on home video here pretty quick.
Well, it is on DVD.
Is it out? Yeah. I wasn't aware that it was already
The thing is that, out. Although I said I love the ending shot.
I like it.
Cool.
I like it when they do a ballsy ending like that. Cabin in the Woods had one as well.
Yeah.
Where you know we're gonna set up these dire ramifications, and not only are we going to fulfill them, we're gonna fulfill them in the worst possible way.
Yeah. But the thing
I thought it was brilliant.
The thing is that. Not to give anything away, but how do you like the way they incorporated the modern art statue? I mean, that was really chilling.
Yeah.
The modern art statue. And that's all I'm going to really say because this movie was – you know what's one of the funny things is that all these movies that are on DVD right now are out just a few months ago. And remember when it was a shock that Batman, the 1989 Batman, was released on video a couple of months after?
Oh, yeah. It used to take a year to get stuff on video.
And now it's like, oh, next week. as soon as it's out of theaters on DVD,
even really successful films.
Yeah. Well, fortunately, I get SAG screeners because I'm with the Screen Actors Guild. Stuff nice. Like the Dallas Buyers Club and Captain Miller and August Osage County and.
Do you get a vote on the Oscars?
No, I get a vote in the SAG Awards.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool too.
Yeah. So anyways, we don't have a question of the week this week. We just want you to ask us questions. It's really early in the year and we already asked the, what was your best game of last year and what's your most awaited year game of this year? There really isn't anything to talk about right now in terms of what's going to be happening, but we would like you to ask us questions of what you think is important. Important issues that are coming up this year. So we're not going to tell you what the important issues. You're going to ask us what we think of the important issues that are coming up this year.
We are the VGRT. Ask us anything.
AMAs? Okay. Look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy our feedback, so leave us comments on our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast or the forums at gamingpodcast.net/forum, or send your comments to fans@gamingpodcast.net. We enjoy. You can also check out our gaming news at gamestooge.com. Paul's new game, Team USA's Pinsanity, is now on Facebook, and the Sochi Olympics are just around the corner. So, yeah. Anyways, thanks for listening to us, and we'll see you next week.
Good night, everybody.